Members of Congress from both parties have signaled they're ready to consider privatizing air traffic control, or at least changing how it's funded. One reason is the FAA's struggle to modernize the systems that support safe flight. Many in Washington are wondering whether the system would function more efficiently as a commercial entity. I'll be exploring this idea from a few angles. Today, we're talking to the union that represents the people who actually ensure safe operation of the nation's airspace. Trish Gilbert is the Executive Vice President of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association, or NATCA, and she joins me now. Ms. Gilbert, great to have you on.
Good morning, Tom.
All right, so what does NATCA, what do your members think about this whole idea of changing the air traffic control part of the FAA?
Well, you know, they're very concerned about the system as a whole and the place we find ourselves right now with funding uncertainty, you know, continuing resolutions and government shutdowns, sequestration, furloughing the workforce for budget reasons instead of what's most efficient or safe for the system, not being able to modernize an equipment because of the uncertainty surrounding funding. So there's great concern there because they want to stay the world leader. And in order to maintain the safety of the system and enhance and modernize it, you're going to have to fund it properly, and that's not currently being done. However, they are, you know, very concerned about any of the rhetoric or ideology that pushes us all the way to full-blown privatization without regard to what are the details in that. Does it really fix anything? So there's not any real support for change just for change's sake. They're really interested, and we are interested in the dialogue to see what's broken, fix what's broken, and continue to be the world leader.
And let me ask you this, in the day-to-day operation that your members are engaged in, I mean, they walk into the towers, they turn on the equipment, or I guess it never gets turned off, but they are on those shifts that are dealing with all of this. Are they aware of the aging of the system as they deal with it?
Well, we are working very closely with the aviation stakeholders with changing procedures to make the airspace more efficient. We've just implemented extreme changes in Houston and Dallas and D.C. area and are saving the airlines quite a great deal of money. We're making the system safer while we're doing that. So that is modernizing and making things more efficient. We are deploying a new platform in our in-route facilities and also just starting and getting modernization or new technologies in our terminal, big facilities or the, you know, the ones around the airport. And so there is modernization happening. So I don't think their concern is as much as we're not able to modernize the system because we're working very hard to do so. The stop and start is what is of concern for them. They, you know, we've had a reprieve for the last 2 years with the budget deal. We were able to make some good progress in 2 years, but, you know, sequestration is set to take place on October 1st again, in which case we go back to what we went through in 2013, which is everybody goes back to the operation, those that are helping with the modernization efforts, and you can't move forward. The momentum, you lose the momentum on the efforts that we've put so much work into.
So the next gen or big pieces of it are in place at a few major airports, correct?
Well, next gen is actually the platform for our en-route facilities. All 20 of our facilities are operational readiness right now. We should be fully deployed this spring in all 20 of our en-route facilities for that piece. That is the key piece because that is the chassis on which all the other pieces of technologies will be attached to. You know, we've made efforts on ADS-B. That is fully deployed now. We're waiting for the users to deal with the equipage part of that, and that's going to take some collaboration as well. We have done the efficiency gains with around the big cities as far as operational improvements for those flying in and out of those systems. And we're working on our terminal facilities right now. So there is progress being made. Again, we're concerned that on October 1, that will all come to a halt. We went through a hiring freeze in 2013 because of sequestration and the government shutdown, which we're trying to make up for now. We have a very small workforce for the amount of traffic that's run in the United States. We only have just over 11,000 fully certified controllers, which is the lowest we've ever had in the system. And we need to make up for that hiring that didn't take place in 2013, as it takes 2 to 3 years, sometimes 4 years, to train a full controller from being hired to being a full performance level controller.
All right. So what we've established is there's pretty poor relations within Congress and often between the executive branch and Congress. How would you characterize labor relations right now between the FAA management and the air traffic controllers?
It is in. It is the best I've ever seen. I've been in the agency 26 years, and we've seen the full gamut of relationships. And I think you know, we went through some pretty difficult times back in 2005 and 2006 with regard to our relationship and the impact that that had on our workforce and you know, conversely on the flying public. And I think both from their perspective and certainly from ours, we realized that that was not the healthiest way to deal with our issues. And we've matured a great deal together. And the challenges, you know, have forced us together as well. We have some strong leadership on both sides, knowing that in order for us to get through all this funding uncertainty and to enhance and keep the system safe, we're going to have to work together even more than we've ever have. And we're doing that. So the relationship is very good. It is always challenging. You know, it's a very complex system. It's the largest in the world. And there's a lot of moving parts. You want to keep what's happening today safe. And then you want to be able to improve for what's going to happen tomorrow.
We're speaking with Trish Gilbert. She's the Executive Vice President of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. And so, as you said, pure or full privatization, say turning it over to some contractor, is probably not what the union would favor. What do you see as a possibility for going forward to ensure better funding or more even funding in some other structure? How could it look?
Well, I think you have to take it away from the political gamesmanship that is taking place. The system is nonpartisan. It's about what's best for the country, and you know, it's an economic engine for this country. So I think, you know, taking it out of that part of it, the appropriations, the yearly appropriations process, which is not happening annually, we don't know whether we're going to have a funding bill year after year or even month after month. So I think we have to take it out of that and fund it some other way. There's, you know, we have an aviation trust fund that is an idea. There's several other ideas on the table. So I think some kind of funding reform is most appropriate, and the stakeholders need to continue to talk and see if they can get to a point where they're all in agreement on at least that piece. Now, there's some other pieces that may need to take place around governance and structure to make it more efficient and priority set in a more appropriate way versus the shifting of the political winds. So, you know, all of that conversation is being had, and we're certainly interested in being a part of it and are in many, many places around the city.
Do you think that controllers could ultimately live with reporting to a private entity as opposed to reporting to a manager who is also a federal employee?
I think they could live with whatever they need to do to keep the system safe and a world leader. So it's really all in what's best for the system and what's going to keep it safe. As soon as it looks like there's going to be a shift and it's all about the money, and all, then that's where the big concern becomes, you know, problematic. I mean, for the whole workforce, they love this system, they love their job, and safety is key to them. That would be what would be key.
So if it got turned into some sort of a minimum wage deal, then that probably wouldn't sit too well, because probably you wouldn't get the level of professionalism that characterizes controllers now.
Well, you certainly, it's not a profession that just anybody can do. Not everybody has the patience or the stress level to handle this kind of occupation, 24/7 highly stressed occupation. And it's not, you can't just take somebody, you know, that's not interested in it or that doesn't show the aptitude to do it and throw them into the job and pay them a minimum wage. You really need a well-paid, highly qualified professional individuals to do this job.
And what about the experience in other countries? Canada and Germany are often cited, and Great Britain, as countries, you know, major Western industrial type powers that have been able to privatize their systems. What are the parallels and how do they differ from the United States?
Well, you know, Great Britain is a for-profit model, and you are seeing some of the problems associated with having to be concerned about a bottom line, in some cases over safety, in my opinion. I don't think that is a model we even want to consider in the United States. We provide services to rural America, and you don't see that in a lot of Europe or even in Canada. Canada is a not-for-profit model, which is certainly better than they're able to focus their dollars and their efforts into the operation instead of shareholders. And so, you know, that's the difference in the two system. Again, I think when you compare Canada to the United States, it's an apples and oranges. I mean, they're about, you know, less than a tenth of our size, or about a tenth of the size of the U.S. And again, the difference you're going to see if you go too far with a commercial or a private model in the U.S., you're going to see rural America start to suffer as you start to just provide the services to the bigger cities and to the more populated areas. And that's not good for the country. You need that on-ramp in rural America to our aviation system and that service there to keep us the world leader.
So have you been in touch with any members of Congress, like Bud Schuster, who is chairman of the House Transportation Committee? Have they been talking? How active is this from your point of view?
Oh, it's very active. In the FAA reauthorization bill expires in September of this year, and so they're already having discussions with stakeholders and their colleagues on the Hill on both sides of the aisle about what that bill needs to look like to ensure that we are taking care of the aviation system. So we've had many conversations with the ranking member and the chairman, Chairman Schuster and his staff, on what our concerns and priorities would be. And our number one priority is safety, and then certainly being able to staff and modernize the system. All very, very big concerns for us. And we've been very active with the aviation community as well, from general aviation to the airlines to airports, to making sure that all interests are on the table, so we don't, as we reform these things, if we reform these things, that we don't make it worse. We are only making it better.
All right. Well, as a 2-million-mile flyer, I can tell you I'm very glad for the work your members do. Trish Gilbert is the vice president of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Tom.